drugs. But I remember praying one of my first really, really sincere prayers. And it was, God, please put someone else in this treatment center that's serious about this recovery thing. Because, like, I'm weak and I don't know if I can do this by myself, and I need some kind of support, even if it's one other guy. And I think that prayer was answered, because this man, we went through treatment together and we got out, and we would go through this meeting list and we would pick random Alcoholics Anonymous meetings all around. Some of them wouldn't even exist. Some of them were like four old timers who were like, you know, like just way different than us, but we still felt comfortable. I learned about things. I got a home group, which was a midday matinee group at a clubhouse, where there was a bunch of people not my age and not really my background, but I felt like comfortable there. They allowed me to be of service, and I started to feel connected. I started to like myself. I started to have opportunities to do service, and I started to feel a part of. I remember I went to the first DIA meeting, had just started maybe a few months in Port St. Lucie, the firing line, which is still my home group now, a little over 7 years later. And I went there, and this man was on fire, not just for recovery, but for life, right? Like, he was just passionate and excited, and he would talk about doing fun things, and he just had this light about him. And I was like, I need that guy to sponsor me. Like, whatever that guy's going on, I want. And, you know, it wasn't the material things or anything else. I was like, I just want, like, he seems to like himself. He seems to like other people. And he seems to genuinely, like, be selfless, which was, like, seemed to be a difficult concept, apparently, for me early on. I didn't understand a lot of these spiritual terms. I'm still kind of learning about them now. But I remember going up to this guy and asked him to be my sponsor. And this man not only taught me the book, which he knew very well, but he taught me, like, what it meant to be loving and selfless and full of connectivity with your fellow man, and have integrity and have honesty and have all of these different things, right? We would go to meetings, and he would make sure to pull me alongside of him, and he would introduce me to people. He'd be like, hey, Derek, this is Ross. He's a good dude. You got to meet him. This is Craig. This is Johnny. This is this person. And he would make sure people met me and I met them, you know? And it really kind of helped introduce me, because I was scared, man. Like, early in recovery, I don't know about you guys, but I was scared. I was very uncomfortable. In my opinion, that's really the hardest thing about doing this sort of recovery thing, because we don't have that alcohol and those drugs or whatever it is, and we're kind of losing our identity. I was losing my identity of who I was. So now I'm, like, meeting random people with no buffer at all, and it's scary. That same sponsor would text me things sometimes, like, I love you. I hope you have a great day. And it was so awkward and uncomfortable for me. Like, what do I respond to this man who loves me, apparently? like, I would say, like, thank you, you know? like, or, like, maybe a progress to you too, you know? But yeah, he was a special guy. And he introduced me to Drug Addicts Anonymous. He introduced me to service. He introduced me to 12-step calls. He introduced me to, he said there was, like, an Alcoholics Anonymous, there was this other side of things called general service that you could be a part of. There's this whole, like, back, like, this whole organization, kind of, like, that behind the scenes that does so much for these fellowships. And Drug Addicts Anonymous is becoming this also. We have GSRs, and we have DIA USA conference call meetings, and we have committees. And the people you meet are, like, very inspiring people that spend a lot of their time, that don't have necessarily a lot of free time, devoted to, like, growing a fellowship for the pretty much the sole purpose of not only themselves staying sober, but for getting the new person a place to feel welcome, for introducing the new person to a solution to a hopeless state of body and mind, right? Like, completely hopeless, like, the darkest stuff, man. If you're in deep addiction, it's like a dark, dark place to be. And, like, we're, like, begging for people to find the light. And we're trying to provide avenues for them to do that. So when, like, for my home group, for instance, it's like we would have business meetings. So, again, the topic is creating the fellowship I crave. So we would have business meetings, and we would talk about random stuff and what would be, like, a cool format and different things to do and blah, blah, blah. But, like, underlining it all, like, we would try to get back to the central idea that we need to make this an attractive place for the newcomer to come to. And we are lucky enough to have a lot of newcomers and treatment centers come to this Friday night meeting that I'm a home group member of. So are we sharing a solution? And thank God, like you said, Drug Addicts Anonymous follows the big book, and, like, I was kind of taught to, you know, God, big book, spirituality, service, sponsees, you know, like, that sort of way to get sober, I guess you can say. And we try to carry that into my home group. And the coolest part about that is, like, you don't have to try to do fancy things or meet in a really cool location or anything like that. Like, if you have something that's genuinely attractive to other people, like, if a newcomer comes in and knows, like, this isn't BS, like, these people are real, like, they're sharing something, they're having legitimate results in their life, it'll grow that group automatically. You won't have to really do a lot of stuff. And I was super lucky to be a part of a group with like amazing home group members with a little bit of time in sobriety. And even the ones who didn't have time in sobriety, even when they get a few months, you could see that light start to come on, and then they would attract newcomers. So again, growing the fellowship I crave. Another way is to try to get sponsees. You know, we raise our hand. Who's willing to be a sponsor? Who needs a sponsee? If someone raises their hand in that meeting, I hope, and like we give each other a hard time, like, hey, go talk to them. Like, we need people to go like make this guy feel welcome. If you're bold enough and brave enough to raise your hand in a meeting saying you need a sponsor, like, I hope there's people that come up and talk to that person, female or male. So like getting sponsees, we take commitments into detoxes and treatment centers, because like obviously that's one of the ground zero points where you're going to meet the people that are coming in that hopefully you can touch them when their head clears up a little bit and you can tell them like, hey, there's a solution to what you're struggling with. You know, we found something. And not only did we found a solution, not only do you not have to drink or drug again, hey, you can have fun. You can do fun things. You can go anywhere. You can be anything. You can, you know, you don't have to avoid it. The 10th step promises, all that stuff, no thought or effort. Like, come hang out with this home group. Get a sponsor. Work the steps. And, like, amazing things will happen. So, you know, creating the home group, taking meetings in a commitment, in a treatment centers, getting sponsees. And then, again, like, trying to be a part of this other side of Alcoholics Anonymous, Drug Addicts Anonymous, all these different things where there's like these conference calls and committees, and they don't seem that exciting. And trust me, they're not that exciting. You can ask Zach. He'll make it exciting, though. He does a great job. But sometimes they're a little bit boring, or they just seem like you're not accomplishing anything. But I mean, the fact if I can just show up consistently, which again, I have struggled with this, and I'm talking just as much to myself as I am to anyone. I'm not trying to lecture by any means, because I've gotten a part of something and then I'm too busy and I have other responsibilities, work, social life, you know, whatever. So I don't fulfill what I could be doing. But the times I have shown up and been a part of something and shown up consistently, great things have happened. And I felt so spiritually full. And I've watched things come together, conferences. We put on a state DAA conference. We took over the national DAA conference in Port St. Lucie from the Gainesville people who've been it for 3 years, right? 3 years. They just came up and started working together and met like every other week for like a year to put on this amazing conference for us. And we get there and we get all these amazing speakers, and we tried to do that and take it from them, because they're creating the fellowship they crave, right? Like Gainesville started something, and like we kind of took it over, and like we're growing all together from this. So the coolest thing about kind of growing in a fellowship or growing in my sobriety is the best thing and the easiest thing and the number one thing I've been able to do more or less consistently is just show up. That's it. Right? That's like 90% of doing service. Just be there. Like, you're not, I don't know what I'm doing. I've been to DCM and GSR and these fancy positions, and I still have no idea what I'm doing. Like, I have a sponsee, like, ask me about a tradition, and I have no idea, you know? Because, like, one tradition contradicts another tradition, and it's like this and that, and it's like, so it doesn't really matter. But the fact I show up, I try to have some sort of, like, humble, selfless, and, like, loving attitude, and it kind of just works itself out, you know? So I love Drug Addicts Anonymous. I hope to continue to go to my home group. We've started a few other meetings. We're trying to start a website for our area, for South Florida. We've kind of gone back and forth with making a list of meetings that are around, you know, like a where and when for Drug Addicts Anonymous so people can find it. I know there's a website for DIUSA that lists all the meetings. I mean, we are barely scratching the surface with how amazing this fellowship can be. I really believe that like Drug Addicts Anonymous is the future. And again, not taking anything away from Alcoholics Anonymous. It is definitely not going anywhere. Same thing with Narcotics Anonymous. Cocaine Anonymous is an awesome fellowship, and all these other anonymous fellowships and programs. But I think Drug Addicts Anonymous, people, when they come to a meeting from anywhere who've never been there, they'll be like, this is amazing. How do I find this? How do I get this? Treatment centers say, we don't want AA. Like, we have drug addicts and alcoholics. Like, I want to reach all of them. How do we do that? Like, Drug Addicts Anonymous sounds like a great way to do that. Do you guys have some sort of service structure? Do you have anyone we can call? Do you have materials? Do you have something set up? Do we? Kind of. Mostly. We're trying. More or less. So can we, like, unify to not only have, like, amazing idea of DAA and home groups, which they're growing, but like in kind of all together create something, just like Alcoholics Anonymous has, and we'll continue to do. So that's all I got. Thanks.
Wow. My name is Mitch. I'm a drug addict. It is because of the 12 steps of this program that's laid out in this big book I have up here, the traditions, the sponsor, you guys, the fellowship, and a loving God, why I have not seen it is fit to use any kind of mind, mood altering chemical since January 31st, 2019. And for that, sometimes I am not grateful enough. To calm my jitters down, I want to read something really quick, if you guys don't mind. I love the big book, just like Ben was talking about. And also what I love about this fellowship, Drug Addicts Anonymous, is that I could relate to a lot of things that he was saying about his experience there and also Ben's. But also, too, I have the capacity today to find my own experience. So at the end of... at the beginning of working with others, at the end of our meeting, we say, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other addicts. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other addicts. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Life will take on new meaning to watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. That's very true to me today. And also, too, I want to qualify myself as an addict just because if there's anybody new in the room that you can relate to me. I grew up in Radford, Virginia. I was born up there, but found my way to Knoxville, Tennessee, and that's when a lot of me finding alcohol happened. I found it alcohol first, like a lot of us. What really got me was especially I actually grew up here in Knoxville, even though I'm from live in the Tri-Cities now. It was the opiates that came through and got us OxyContin Original in the early aughts, and it swept a lot of people up. A lot of us that are sitting here nodding our heads, going, "Yep, yep, those days." But anyway, I remember I didn't really get that feeling like I had arrived, like the big book said about drinking alcohol. But I tell you this right now, I thought that I found my purpose in life when I felt that particular chemical the first time. And I pretty much said that I would go to any length, anyhow, any way to have it in my body at all times, no matter how. Every time I said that I wouldn't do this, I would do something else to get it. And as I fell deeper into my addiction. Now, the reason why I told you that is because, like I said, if you're new, I just want you to be able to relate to me as far as what I'm talking about. Now, as far as creating the fellowship we crave, when I first came to the program and I started hearing that, when I came to Drug Addicts Anonymous, a lot of people told me, let's create the fellowship we crave. See, it's not about me finding friends. It's not about me creating these friends that I want to have because we wear the same clothes and we go to the same football games. You know, it has nothing to do with that for me today. You know, I'm looking for like-minded people, man. I'm looking for a connection that I innately crave as a human being, you know. And for me, what I found out in my experience, my connection is with God, the God of my understanding, the only one that broke the obsession and compulsion for me to use. That was the first gift that I received in Drug Addicts Anonymous, that I was taught by a sponsor doing the 12 steps. Now, creating the fellowship that I crave, like the original speaker here talking about coming with service. Service work for me, guys, I always thought that he rattled off a lot of different GSRs, DCMs, and stuff like that. I had to find it in myself to take it easy, and I'd find like-minded people. You know what? Sometimes it's starting off early. Used to, it was cleaning cigarette ashtrays. It was stacking chairs, shaking hands, doing that awkward thing. Like he talked about, you know, his sponsor saying, I love you, but, you know, innately as a man, sticking your hand out inside of a new group saying, hey, my name's Mitch, and, you know, I really need some help. You know, it really goes against a lot of my MO. So, but in doing that service and trying to get out of self, because I don't know about anybody else in this room, but I can get really high on Mitch. And when I get really high on Mitch, I become less connected to the main purpose of carrying out God's work. So we have a fellowship in Kingsport, speaking of starting off early. I've seen that particular fellowship too grow, and it brings a smile to my face. And I always tell other home group members that I feel like I'm connected to the mothership when I'm in there. I feel like that we are all on the same brainwaves, the same patterns. You know, I also, too, I am grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous, because the first year that I was sober, there was a noon meeting like clockwork with a bunch of old-timers in the town that I live in. And sometimes it just took me being in there to listen to them and to have a seat and somewhere to be safe, because without the fellowship and other people that had come before me that had some suggestions for me to take and left to my own devices, things wouldn't go off so hot. But I've seen our fellowship grow, and especially with nowadays COVID, we never shut the doors of our fellowship. We may have moved three different places, but God's never failed us, man. I was always taught early on, as long as we put God first, we cannot fail. And in my experience, every time that I've put God first in any situation, inside and outside of these rooms, it's all worked out. And the great thing about that is, too, creating the fellowship that I crave also doesn't apply in the rooms of Drug Addicts Anonymous. It also applies in my life outside of it, because, you know, the 12th step is preparing me to carry a message, you know, carry a message upon having a spiritual awakening as a result of working these steps and practicing these principles in all my affairs, being a principled person, you know. Sometimes it's hard for me. Sometimes it's hard for me to be a principled person, you know. I'd like to stand up here and lie my ass off and tell all you guys that, man, I've been looking forward to this, and you know, I've been really studying, and I got all this Gucci shit to say, but it's really not the case, man. I've been through so much here lately that God knows exactly what he had in store to bring me to you guys today. Since I've been clean this last time, I haven't had this many speaking engagements, man. I've been asked to do service like it has been. He's looking out for me. Apparently, he has something to have my head up out of my ass and to go help somebody else. A lot of things have happened, too. You know, mind you, creating the fellowship we crave, our tradition talks about having attraction rather than promotion. I was taught early to come into a meeting, smile if you have to smile. Some of the old timers call it fake it till you make it. We're trying to attract the newcomer. If someone's coming in the room, man, and their ass is falling off, we've all felt that feeling. If we're sitting here at the Holiday Inn on Friday, we know what desperation feels like. I mean, my man I met earlier drove from Wisconsin. You know, I mean, you, who does that? You know what I'm saying? No, I'm serious. Someone that wants to stay sober, someone that wants to be about this life, brought his ass and parked it in that chair today from Madison, Wisconsin. You're a blessing, brother. I'm grateful to be in your presence. I'm glad to meet you. Anyway, where was I going with that? Shameless plug. We will be eating some good food while I'm here. By God, I love food. Shameless plug. So anybody wants to go to restaurants that's not from around here, holler at your boy. Anyway, attraction for the newcomer, like I was taught early, it's like, welcome them in. Everybody knows what it feels like to be that wallflower on the wall that feels like you don't fit in. Not to mention, feel all those feelings of not fitting in, that you're a hopeless dope fiend, and you're about to come out of your damn skin. You don't know where to go. All you're thinking about is, maybe there is a piece of that pill left in the bottom of my car, and I'll just get out of here, and yeah, I'll come back later. No, you won't. Trust me, I didn't, you know. But we want to be attracted. As far as the attraction, it's not the tennis shoes, man. It's not the cars. It's not all the shit that we think is going to make us happy or make other people think that we're the cool kids or such and such. It's that glow that we get, man, from having that spiritual experience. That glow that none of us can replicate, man. When you see God all over somebody, man, you see it before they do, usually, and you can't replicate that. Usually you see that glow after someone's got a little pain, man, and they had another spiritual awakening, and that's a beautiful thing. That's another gift of this program, is seeing that happen for another person and actually being genuinely happy for that person and not being like, oh, man, fuck that guy. He still owes me $20, you know. But the fellowship that I have today, I want to be with like-minded people, man. I want to be with like-minded people. I go to meetings today because, you know, early on, if someone came up to me and said, you know, hey, Mitch, man, you have this faith in God and you're doing this, like, you know, have you ever broke your trust with God? You know, early on, I would just be like shaking my head, you know, whatever company man line I could tell you, whatever. But now I could say that, man, I get full of self and I screw up. But getting back to the original point, man, having a certain attraction, knowing that we're all in here and we're trying to help the newcomer, you know, I want to make sure that I am being connected. I want to make sure that I'm going to meetings and doing the things that I was taught in the beginning that saved my ass in the first place, right? That saved my ass in the first place, and I'm meeting other people. People that have been there and done that sober now, you know. I'm not working the steps, and I'm not looking for a fellowship to keep me off drugs and alcohol. I'm trying to see how you still are seeking that spiritual experience. That's why I go to meetings too. I want to hear what it was like for you, and what are you doing about it today, seeking God? That's the fellowship, man, that I crave today. And to say that in front of you people right now, man, this guy, compared to where he was when he first came in, that's amazing to me, man. That's amazing to me. Lastly, like Ben originally started off, still you may say, but I will not have the benefit of contact with you who write this book. We cannot be sure. God will determine that. So you must remember that your real reliance is always upon Him. He will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. I was also taught in this big book there's asterisks around stuff. Asterisk around that. Alcoholics Anonymous will be glad to hear from you. I wonder why is that? Why is that? They want to hear about your experience. They want to hear about the fellowship that you crave, that you're creating. You know, we share our stories. We share our experience. And we share how we keep looking for that connection. That connection that's bigger than all of us. That connection that brought us here today, man. Keep seeking God for growth. It's all around us. You know, a lot of the people that I talk with in my sponsor tree, the suggestions that they have come up with have really helped me, because by all means, none of the things that I've said today is an original thought. It's all the shit that we've heard in meetings. It's all of our and we build from each other's experiences. I reached out to a few of my most trusted individuals that I love, like I said, like-minded folks. And I asked them, I said, what's it like for you? I asked them two different things. I said, how are you meeting God today? And how are you creating the fellowship you crave? And I wanted to pray and meditate on that all week and to take from and about their concept of where they're getting it from, you know, and see if it matches with any of my experiences. That helps me grow in a world that I live in today at this moment. Where am I? What am I doing? I'm at Holiday Inn, Cedar Bluff, Knoxville, Tennessee, looking at smiling faces of miracles, man. Miracles that society said that there ain't no way, man. There ain't no way. Lost causes. Bet your ass we're not lost causes. What am I doing? I'm sharing my experience to the best of my ability, talking into a microphone. Someone asked me to do something a few weeks ago, and it popped up, and I said, hell yeah, I'll do it. I'll be honored. Used to, I couldn't tell you where I was at and what I was doing for nothing. And now hopefully, man, with the fellowship that I crave and the message that I send, hopefully it's helping another person that's like-minded like myself find God and also still carry that message. Thank you.
Drug addict named Brandon. Hey, Brandon. I'll either shut myself down in like 10 minutes and I'll stop talking, or you'll have to cut me off because I'll get rolling. I'm not sure which one it'll be. And kind of like Mitch said, I wish that I could tell you guys that I had like this glorious speech plan, but that's just not the way that it rolled out. I'm glad that Clinch walked in because closer. Is that better? Okay. I'm glad Clinch walked in because I was about to tell a story and I was hoping that somebody from the story was going to be here. So August 22nd, 2017 is the day that God removed the obsession for me to want to get drunk and get high. And I'm truly grateful for that day. And probably about a year before that, in 2016, I had found myself in Knoxville, Tennessee. Before I keep going, I didn't raise my hand, but I'm from Kentucky, and Kentucky walked in too while I was back here. So Kentucky's in the house now. So I wound up living in South Knoxville in a halfway house. And like everybody else, I bounced around fellowships before I was introduced to Drug Addicts Anonymous. And probably like a lot of people, I've been to countless rehabs. It doesn't matter to count how many, and countless halfway houses and sober living houses. And I just happened to end up in South Knoxville around the time that the DAA group in Knoxville had outgrew the apartment and they had just found the church. And the funny thing about this topic for me is I've never had any trouble in any town I went to, in any fellowship I went to. I could make friends. We'd be playing volleyball on Saturday, or we'd be doing cookouts, and then I'd be high 2-3 days later, 2 weeks later. Similarly, in Knoxville that time, the obsession hadn't been removed, and I found myself at probably the second or third meeting at the Inskip Church, and I had already relapsed, and I was trying to hide it from everybody. I was on paper. And Clinch and a couple of other people who aren't here caught me in the parking lot, and he may not remember this, but they said, "Are you done?" And I was like, "What do you mean done? Like, fuck you guys. I'm sober right now." And they looked at me, and they said, "You're not going to quit." And I was like, who the fuck are you to tell me I'm not going to quit? And they said, "You don't know how to abandon yourself to God." And I went on the run shortly after that, had the worst run of my life for the next 2 months, ended up in long-term treatment, still didn't get sober, got high through treatment, ended up back in jail, getting high in jail, and something happened in jail on August 22nd, 2017, and the obsession was removed. But what those guys said to me stuck with me, and when I got out, I found a local AA meeting, but some of the first people that reached out to me when they knew that I had gotten out were those guys in Inskip Baptist Church parking lot, and I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't have a bad word to say about Alcoholics Anonymous. And I know, not to judge anybody, but I know that a lot of people that are here are from larger communities or from larger cities. And that's not the case for me. I'm from a small town, went to a single A high school. We have one AA meeting in 3-4 counties, and it's a really watered down Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. The traditions mean something to the old timers there, but they need to keep the doors open, so they allow some things to go on. And that was okay with me for a really long time, and I still go to that meeting. I still love those old timers. They taught me so much. But a point came in my recovery where I was just as miserable at 19 months sober as I was the day that God removed the obsession. And I had a host of friends. I was sponsoring people. We were having cookouts. We were doing all of these things. Like, I was right in the middle of everything like I always had been, and I was sober, and I was still miserable. And I didn't understand what was wrong. I want to read something, too. And just so you guys know, I could do this whole talk straight out of the big book, and I'm trying my best not to. Like, I'm trying to leave it closed. My friend had emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles in all my affairs. Particularly was it imperative to work with others as he had worked with me. Faith without works was dead, he said, and how appallingly true for the alcoholic. For if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. If he did not work, he would surely drink again, and if he drank, he would surely die. then faith would be dead indeed. With us, it is just like that. That's where I was at 19 months of sobriety. And I still didn't know how to abandon myself to God. So for me, there is no, I am incapable of creating a fellowship. Without the fellowship of the Spirit, there is no fellowship for me. Shortly after that, we started a DAA meeting in London, Kentucky. And it started off with 2-3 people. And then it jumped to 60-70 people. And then it was like 70-80 people. And then COVID happened, and it's back to 2 people. It's back to me. It's back to me and one guy who take turns going up there and opening the door. And that's okay. Like, it's okay. Our doors are still open. We still have a room, and we have enough money to keep the room going, and that's fine. The beautiful thing that happened for me, though, is when I, just for a second, because I don't know how to abandon myself to God 24 hours a day. I wish that I could tell you that I do. But for those brief moments where I do, I met Patton, and I found out that there was a DAA meeting in Lexington, Kentucky. Ryan and Clinch invite me down because they're starting area. I end up in Johnson City, and I meet Craig, and I meet Mitch, and I meet all these guys. And I end up on the phone with Zach like 3 weeks later. The fellowship was already created long before I ever came. The first time that I read this book to try to learn something, I remember reading Create the Fellowship That You Crave, and I thought that I had the ability to do that. The longer that I stay sober, the more I realize that I can't. And it's just there. All I have to do is step out of the way. When I firmly take that third step decision, remarkable things are sure to follow. And the remarkable things are that I can step into a fellowship of the Spirit that was created in the 30s that's still here, and it's everywhere that I look. Haley walked upstairs to feed the baby, but like Mitch said, it's not just in these rooms. Like, that 5-month-old never has to see me used today. That is a part of the fellowship of the Spirit that I am eternally grateful for. My 8-year-old saw some really, really, really shitty things, and that little boy doesn't ever have to see it. And it's because of the people that were here before me. Specifically, shout out to Knoxville DAA, because you guys showed me this. And I don't, Clinch told me, and like I said, I don't know if he remembers saying any of this stuff. He may be like, I can't believe I said that. But he told me if I wanted what they had, that I had to do what they did. And the AA meeting that I was in, people didn't believe that at the time. And AA believes that, but where I was, those people didn't believe that at the time. And I'm truly grateful that there's still people around who tell me that if I want what these people had, that they're talking about in the book, that I have to do what they did. And I'm assuming that all these people sitting in this room are people like that, or we wouldn't be here at the Holiday Inn on a Friday night. Like I said, I know I wasn't going to talk the whole 18 minutes because I didn't have some glorious speech planned. Just to repeat it, though, like, I am incapable of creating a fellowship. I can't create it. It was already created. And when what Ben read, I feel that I've met Bill and Bob along the way. Every time that I walk into a room like this, or that I walk into a business meeting or an area meeting, or just the first time I went to Johnson City, when I saw all those hands raised of people who were willing to sponsor other people, like, I felt like I was sitting in Akron in 1939. Because I'd never been in a room where literally there were more people raising their hand to sponsor people than there were people who needed sponsored. Like, 3/4 of the room were ready to sponsor somebody. And when I saw that, I was like, man, this shit works. And this is exactly where I need to be. And I'm truly grateful for that. And thanks for letting me speak.
Oh, my God, man. They did so good. Hey, let's give them another hand. Whenever they were speaking, I was over there and I was sitting there, and it was kind of like I finally felt safe. You ever get that feeling, you know, you're finally with your people and you just got this sense of just I'm safe, you know. I get that from the fellowship, you know. And that sometimes I beat up the fellowship too much, you know. And I so much am in love with the fellowship. Few things. Yeah, I screwed up the whole beginning, didn't I? You know, I didn't pray. I didn't. You know, I was like, well, okay. Housekeeping. Got to do some housekeeping. The reason I did that was because I was waiting for more people. You know. But housekeeping, okay, smoking, vaping, all that good stuff is got one place out here in the front. Go down this way, close to the swimming pool. There's a good area right there, and then there's a place back there. Try to do that there. And, I mean, y'all going to do what y'all want, but my credit card's on the damn thing, so I might say something. Just say. But anyway, you see, the other stuff, we got merchandise, we got, oh my God, woo, woo, yeah. But anyway, so we got snacks, we got coffee, we got all that good stuff, and then our next speaker is going. What time is our next speaker? Shit. 8:30. Okay, all right. Next speaker is at 8:30, and it is Zach, and he is going to bring the house down. And then tomorrow morning, we got Tara, and oh my! If y'all haven't heard Tara, but anyway, I can end it with a prayer. So let's end this with the Lord's Prayer, please. Our Father, with art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those that trespass against us. And lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil. That's the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Yeah. Thank you. See you at 8:30. Hey.